Hey guys, we have been doing Nightcall now for over a year. Time flies. Apparently this is our 64th episode. Rachel informed me when we got in here. And it's been great, and we really appreciate everybody listening to the pod and being a part of our Night Weirdos community. But we are ready to take the Nightcall experience to the next level. Airborne.
So we've decided to launch a Patreon to give you guys to give you guys access to special rewards and special events and bonus episodes and stuff. Our website is patreon.com/nightcall, and you'll be able to find updates, tier rewards, all sorts of information.
Things like merch and book club and special invitations to in-person meetups that you can't get anywhere else but on our Patreon.
Secret society meetups. We're starting a cult, basically, is what's happening. But you can support us with as little as $1 a month or more if you're feeling crazy. And we're really looking forward to furthering our Nightcall mission through Patreon and bringing you all sorts of new cool stuff.
So please join us on the astral plane at patreon.com/nightcall.
It's 1:22 a.m. in Rhyme City, and you're listening to Night Call.
Night Call.
Welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. My name is Emily Yoshida. I am here, not in Rhyme City, but in New York City. And with me on the other end of the line in Los Angeles, I have...
Molly Lambert.
And Tess Lynch, as well as our special guest this week, Dan Hernandez.
Hello. I'm a super fan of the show, so I'm glad that I made it here.
Dan is a friend of Night Call, and he co-wrote the movie Detective Pikachu with his writing partner, Benji Samet, coming out everywhere in May.
May 10th.
We are very excited about this movie, so we are very excited to have Dan as a guest.
I am so excited mostly for the reason that Ken Watanabe's name, his character's name in it, is Detective Yoshida. And it's very, very seldom that there's a Yoshida in fiction. Like, they almost never pop up just because, like, one, Japanese names don't pop up as often, and two, for whatever reason, that one doesn't. So I was very excited, and I think my handle on Twitter was Detective Yoshida for a while out of a celebration.
It was, and I appreciated that. No one was more pumped than I was when Ken Watanabe signed on to the movie, because The Last Samurai was like my college go-to movie with my friend group from college. And so whenever anything good happens, we just say they're all perfect. You remember when he finishes his poem? When he attains Satori on the battlefield.
Yeah.
Wow. Speaking of battlefields.
Oh, look at that.
Holy,
we're
going
to talk about a show called Game of Thrones.
And while we wait for our producers to leave their respective booths, because neither of them have watched the episode The Long Night.
I think Roy said he can handle Game of Thrones. He just doesn't want Avengers spoilers, which, spoiler, there will be no spoilers.
Okay.
Yes. Avengers, a movie none of us have seen. Mm-hmm. But there will be spoilers for Game of Thrones. If you don't want them, leave now.
But
these are spoilers for the episode The Long Night, not whatever episode aired last night, which, when you're hearing this, we are still living a week in the past. So... But it was a big episode. It was a big battle episode. So that's why everybody's spoiler-phobic.
But at this point, everyone should have been absorbed into the monoculture by a week
later,
right?
There's like, excuse.
I refuse to be absorbed. I refuse.
So this is a long-standing thing with Molly back from Girls in Hoodies, is that Molly refuses to be wooed by Game of Thrones.
I do not like the show.
Be honest, how many episodes of the show have you watched,
Molly? At least five, and I've seen the pilot more than one time. I think it is boring. And, you know, I thought I didn't like medieval things, but now I've gone to the Ren Fair like 3 years in a row with Jane Marie, a friend of the pod. And it turns out I do like medieval things. I just don't really like Game of Thrones.
How do you feel about Lord of the Rings?
also don't like it. I feel like there's too much CGI and like New Zealand is already very beautiful and the obsession with like, let's make the sunset perfect every time is insane.
Not to mansplain to you, but the CGI is actually quite minimal in The Lord of the Rings. They use a lot of bigatures and practical effects in it.
Starly Kine, another friend of Nightcall, claimed to me that Game of Thrones was not really a fantasy show. It just has dragons, and the dragons are awesome.
I mean, but it doesn't just have dragons. Argument. Melisandre.
Yeah, there's the
Melisandre.
The Lord of Light. There's all of her magic. There's
the White Walkers, obviously.
That's what we call low magic.
Yeah,
it's magic selective. Is exceptional when it happens.
Yeah. And like brand.
So some people have magic.
Yes, some people have magic.
Some people have magic, but when it happens, it's near miraculous. And by the way, Emily's mansplaining voice was sort of just my internal monologue. So I feel a little uncomfortable.
We have an authority. Dan has read all the books.
Oh, damn. I've only read one of them. I read the first one and I was like, okay, I got it. I enjoy watching it as a show more, but I might go back and read them someday. I don't know.
I tend to do the deep dive on anything that I get excited about. So I absorb them immediately. And, you know, it's a sad thing that the last book came out the year that I moved to Los Angeles, which I think was 2011. So I've been waiting anxiously for the, you know, for the last book. But I've spent my time on the Wiki of Ice and Fire.
Oh, me
too. I feel like I'm ready. I'm prepared. But I will say when I got to the show today, there was already tension in the air surrounding Game of Thrones.
Tess and I were already fighting about Game of Thrones when Dan approached us to say, hey, I'm here to do the podcast.
What was the fight? Just that Tess... by the way, I love that Tess, you were on the anti-side back in Girls in Hoodies days. And since then, you have crossed over.
She's crossed over, but... She's gonna fight with you now
about Daenerys.
Daenerys.
Look, I don't hate Daenerys at all. I did say that in my opinion, Daenerys is the least interesting kind of main character. I had to catch up on this show, and it wasn't fun catching up on the show.
it was not fun to watch.
Yeah. We were talking about mukbangs a minute ago. Like it was like I was like gotta get through
and try to remember
who these people are.
In season one, she mukbangs that horse heart. Remember?
Yes. Yes. Okay. There. Yeah.
ASMR mukbang horse heart. Dothraki village.
I mean, it's touched on everything, so it's. Any kind of reference that you make to anything, there is probably a Game of Thrones example. I warm to it. I don't find that you'd have to be Team Daenerys or Team Sansa, personally.
But I was saying only one person can win.
Sure.
Well, you see that it's not necessarily
you do have to be true. Team Daenerys or Team Sansa because they can't both.
Well, they're they both don't want the same thing, though. It's just that,
exactly.
But one of them's going to have to die. It's a battle royale.
It's not necessarily no.
In last night's episode, which is now many episodes in the past because of the wonders of time traveling podcasting.
We'll get to the timeline theories at the end.
Yes, but I mean, Sansa was legitimately hiding in the crypt while Daenerys was fighting on the dragon. I got to say, Daenerys dropped the ball a couple times.
She was fighting on the dragon.
Yeah, she was fighting on the dragon.
A lot has happened since the first five episodes of season one.
Wait. She was riding a dragon. I thought you meant she was punching a dragon.
No, although there was some dragon on dragon battle as well.
It could have been better. That was the part of the episode that I liked because it looked the most like a heavy metal album cover. And I was like,
totally.
This is my shit. I love it.
The blue flames coming out of the white dragon.
I think all the dragons look cheap. They look like Xena.
It's
the
dragons fine. You look cheap. It looks like Dungeons and Dragons, like the cover of like the manuals for Dungeons and Dragons. I love it. Like,
well, guess it is what? It is. Dan is wearing a Dungeons & Dragons shirt right now.
Yeah.
It's so cool. It's and made out of, like, Dungeons & Dragons iconography, I think.
This is my formal Dungeons & Dragons shirt for business opportunities.
It's more subtle.
A more subtle D&D.
8, 5, 12,
12,
12,
12,
15,
15,
16, 16. This
week's episode of Night Call is brought to you by Cheers Health. This is Emily from Night Call, and if you're like me, you love to unwind with a nice glass of vino after a long day at work, or whatever your drink of preference is. Mine is the wine. I can't help it. I'm basic. I'm Cersei Lannister. But let's be honest, once you hit the age of 25 to 30, moderate responsible drinking can leave you feeling less than 100% the next day. It's a total drag to just go out and not even feel like you're raging or partying or anything like that. You just want to hang out and relax or meet up a friend for a drink, and you end up waking up the next day feeling sluggish and not your best self. Well, Cheers is the product for responsible drinking and drinkers. Cheers exists to bring people together by promoting fun, responsible, and health-conscious alcohol consumption. Cheers was kind enough to send us a starter kit of the Cheers After Alcohol Aid and Oral Rehydration Solution, both of which you can take after, basically after you take your first drink. So I tried it. I was a little skeptical. You know, there's lots of after drinking cures out there on the market, but Cheers is really focused about, you know, protecting the health of your liver, keeping you hydrated, you know, all things that make sense for me as far as, you know, how to recover after a night of drinking. And I was so pleasantly surprised with how great I felt the next day. Cheers can help you feel up to 50% better than you normally would after drinking. And I definitely experienced that the next day. You know, I might not have had the most productive day. I might have been a little bit under the weather. But with Cheers, I was able to get my day back. And that was great. It's invaluable. To use Cheers, simply take 2 to 4 capsules after your last alcohol beverage or before you go to bed. If you don't wake up feeling at least 50% better the next day, you'll get your money back guaranteed. So Night Call listeners, to order Cheers, visit cheershealth.com. Enter the promo code NIGHTCALL, that's all one word, at checkout to get 10% off your first order and a free gift. That's cheershealth.com. Promo code NIGHTCALL, NIGHTCALL, for 10% off and a free gift with your first order. I am being 100% honest when I say that Cheers has basically a customer for life in me. It's a really great help, and I don't drink without Cheers, so neither should you. With Cheers, you're going to start feeling better when you wake up, and your liver is going to thank you.
12, 9, 20, 5, 14, 5, 18, 19.
But Molly, you've only watched the first 5 episodes. I feel it's hard
more
to even
of a general. I just don't care for sword and sandal that much.
But it's not that.
Well, there are only sandals once you get to Dorne, and
it's true.
Actually,
she doesn't even know what Dorne is.
I have lodged the complaint many times that I don't understand why it takes place in like a British colonialist universe.
It doesn't though. It takes place in the whole world. Like there's Asia.
It takes place in many different universes.
I'm so aware of the mansplaining voice, but. It's based on the historical War of the Roses.
Yes.
Well, why not just make something about the historical War of the Roses?
Because they didn't have dragons, Molly.
But like, everybody's always like, well, it's historic. That's why everybody's white. And it's like, yeah, but there's dragons.
But not everybody's white.
No, they're not everybody is white.
A lot of them are white, but not everybody. British. Why are they British?
They're not all British. They speak in many different languages.
And the interesting thing is that it really, like, now that you have people from one part of the world that have landed in this other part of the world, that's basically like Northern England or Scotland, and they're like from the equivalent of, you know, the Middle East, like there's a tension, like there's a differentness, like it definitely addresses
that.
What
if you made a show about like real world history instead of
like real world Westeros?
They haven't ever made a show about real world history, Molly.
Where people stop being polite and start getting real.
Yeah, what if just a show about like some people who live in a house in King's Landing?
Yeah.
I mean,
I would watch that also.
That's coming.
I would watch it.
Well, one thing about last night's episode that, like, so I got completely, like, carpet bombed by, I don't know if that's the correct term, but I did, like, by Daenerys fans, because, like, this show has gotten to the place where people really identify with these characters like they are political figures. And I made a joke about Daenerys's comparative worthlessness last night, and, like, really, really, like, I woke the dragon, as they say. And I thought that was fascinating, because, like, last time I was doing anything about the show, like, writing about it, I don't feel like the level of discourse was at this level, and sometime in the last couple years it's gotten insane.
It has.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also got attacked by Game of Thrones fans for suggesting that if they like really tedious, complicated mythologies, they should check out local politics.
So as an impartial observer,
worst.
I'm watching Emily and Molly fight a battle on two fronts last night on Twitter. But I can't help but feel that you Molly must have known what was about to happen.
I was complimenting them. I was saying it's very impressive. You can keep track of these boring storylines and fake people. Imagine if you applied this a breadth of paying attention to.
But Molly, you're the person who always says you can. You're the person who always says you can pay attention to more than one thing. You are completely going against.
I have also said it's just Game of Thrones. Like I can pay attention to a boring, hard to explain plot line if it's on Mad Men or some show that I like. You know, I'm trying to explain it to somebody, it totally sounds boring, but I care. Or Vanderpump Rules,
I'm
person is more important, you know, cares about this person more than they care about them. But I think Game of Thrones fans have, it's just weird how people who like the things that are the most popular get so mad at you for being I don't like this thing that everybody likes.
Well,
they're
that's stuff is
fuck
shitty.
You. How dare you? And the same thing is true with Marvel Hive. Yeah. That's what's scary about it is I'm just what are these movies doing for you, really?
So there's two arguments, which is one, the let people like things thing, which I think is stupid. I think anything can be criticized, and I don't really adhere to that.
All I'm saying is High Life fans don't attack me and say you should die if you didn't see High Life yet. And I do want to see High Life. That's the movie I'm excited about.
Yeah. But don't you think it's all a byproduct of these things were so marginalized for so long?
No, because it's nerd culture has been dominant for the 20 years. It's not marginalized. Superhero movies have been the dominant form. Everything is for 12-year-old boys only. And it's if you say oh, actually, I'm not super, that's not what I'm super into. People are how dare you not I don't know.
It's less about nerd culture not being newly ascendant because it's not really newly anymore. But I feel like it's you are now able to curate the communities and the people, the taste of the people that you surround yourself with to a T. So when you're when you do have an opposing viewpoint cross your awareness, it feels
not even opposing, cold water. Some of it's feels gamergate-y where it's the worst I ever got attacked was for being wouldn't it be nice if GTA had a female character once? And everybody was fuck you,
wait,
bitch.
Really? Yeah.
Yes. They were I hope you get raped and die. And I was I like the games. That's the whole thing I'm saying is that I like the games and I would just once one of the prostitutes that you have an interaction with to be the main character that you play because it would be fun and do something new with the games.
Here, I will say this about Game of Thrones, and this is and maybe if Tess or Dan, you have differing experiences, please chime in. But the reason that I like Game of Thrones, and I think kind of also the reason why people have this very strong reaction to this, is that I personally, I'm a masochist. So when I start watching something like the first episode of Game of Thrones, which makes zero sense to me, and I don't know who anybody is or what they're talking about, my instinct, if it's at all interesting to me, is to put myself through it and figure it out and learn who all the dumb little characters are and look at a map and shit. That's my nerdy,
yeah,
self coming
through.
Yeah,
I don't like to look
through.
At a map.
No,
yeah.
I totally agree
Once
with
you
that.
Once you get through it, though, then it's oh, I've gone through all of this. I've done all the things and now
if it's The Wire, if it's something I'm interested in, sure. Or I'm I do want to find out what happens in this world, I just fundamentally do not want to spend time in a medieval world because it just seems horrible to me.
Well, I think there's two things. I do agree that nerd culture has been ascendant for a long time, but I also think that what is remarkable about Game of Thrones, at least when it was first written, was that it was such a subversion of what the expectation was that mm-hmm. now people feel like they're a part of something.
But don't you think the show's not as much of a subversion as the books are?
I think that the first season was pretty shocking to people who weren't familiar with it.
But
and
didn't
so
they
once
just
you
throw a lot of rape in it that wasn't in the book.
They were liberal with their rape.
There's too
allotment.
Much rape in the
yes.
show. That was what really put me off on the first season. I was like, I hate this because they always are it's medieval times. Everybody's getting raped all the time. And so, again, I'm like, there are dragons. You can do whatever you want in this made up world. This is what you're choosing. Using
that,
to show.
They definitely leaned into that, and that was, I think, maybe not the. I mean,
it
was pretty.
It just put me off the show. And again, it's I thought I just hated medieval stuff, And then I saw Paul Verhoeven's Flesh and Blood, and I was like, no, it's just Game of Thrones. But
I guess what I'm trying to say is I think there's like a deeper level
that's
of like...
That's cool. The Paul Verhoeven version is more chill with you than...
What I like about Flesh and Blood is it really leans into how horrible medieval times were.
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't romanticize it in any way.
I would argue that Game of Thrones does the same thing. It's just like, it's a different style, but I think they do
people want to live
thing.
In Game of Thrones.
I don't want to live in Game of Thrones. Holy
no,
shit.
No. I don't think anyone... I think that people, like with the GTA, with Game of Thrones, I think that any time that you get turned on to something that is seemingly like underground, even though in this case it is the least underground thing ever anymore, I think that initial, that like vitriolic response is like, how dare you attack the thing that like I am cool enough to like, fuck you.
Yeah.
And I think that that is in anything, Gamergate, Comicsgate, whatever. Yeah. Like, so I do understand like the fandom of this is oftentimes really hard to even deal
with. I just feel like it's Game of Thrones. I don't think it's maybe it's just because it's such a
it's,
hugely
it's Marvel
popular
too.
Show.
It's like anything that's popular.
Right, but it's these things that are so popular. Again, it's like people who like Succession don't like tweet mean shit at you if you're like, I don't really watch Succession.
Most of my like involvement with the show though has not been like talking to people online about it. Like it's been watching the show and like looking at the Wiki of Ice and Fire. Like I don't like I'm not on the boards for this one, you know? Like I find my own enjoyment of it. I've decided to like enjoy the show in my own way, so like it doesn't really matter to me how fans are talking about it.
To wrap up this segment, let's talk about who everyone's voting for. I mean rooting for. Who's everybody
not a democracy.
Who's everybody rooting for in the Game of Thrones to win?
Well, I defer to Emily and Dan.
I mean, I'm not rooting for anybody. Like,
yeah, it's not, I feel like it's not really
it's
that
a competition
kind of thing.
I'm rooting
show.
For Cersei. I mean.
Thank you. There we go. Unexpectedly.
Okay, so you guys are on the same side.
We are. I just feel like Daenerys did fine in the battle last night. That's all I'm saying is that I can't dock Daenerys for ordering her dragon baby to
How
scorch
about for
everybody.
Those cheap wigs they all wear on the show.
Oh my god. Okay, we're moving
Dan,
on because Rachel's back in the booth. No more spoilers.
Okay, wait, we got to know who Dan is voting for.
I will do this no spoilers, but my vote for the Iron Throne is Sansa. I think that she is
I want Sansa for Warden of the North.
There's like a VP
It's
so complicated. It's like, how can you begin
like,
to explain?
Yeah, it's hard to it's hard to even talk dialogue with you because
this is again what I'm saying. Like, imagine if you could just is Sansa the ginger? Is she one of the ginger?
She's the ginger. You should like her.
Yeah, she's great. Like her. She's fantastic. Yeah. I love her.
She's very dry.
If Mad Men had maps, would you examine the Mad Men maps? Like, Don Draper's apartment is.
No, I'm not good with maps generally. Maps are a weak point.
I love
that you kind of just have to be inclined. Like, actually, George R. R. Martin wrote the first chapter of the book and sat down and was like, I need to make a map.
No, I
know. Hold up. I need a map.
Don't, like, risk.
Yeah.
Give me a good map.
I'm a map fan, too. I'm very excited to talk about...
What is Place, anyway?
The film event of the summer... Is there a map of Rhyme City? Is there a geography?
Is it in the Alola region?
It's in its it's in its own region that is not, it's Rhyme City. It's kind of its own unique place. There is not a formal map, although I did draw myself a map when we were in the process of writing, just to kind of keep some of the very Game of Thrones-esque complexity straight as we were writing. But yes, so...
The Pokeverse is not... Pokeverse is not unlike Game of Thrones in a way. I mean, there are so many, like, compelling characters from different regions. Like, it's, you know...
Yeah,
some of them are dragon-like.
Right, because there's, like, the plant creatures and the water creatures.
There's so many types.
Yeah. Robot, it's psychic types, of course.
See, this is like a Game of Thrones I would care about. If everybody on Game of Thrones was a cutie animal.
Well, this is
then you're going to love this movie. I got news.
Well, like, Pokemon is for people who are interested in, what's it called? Like, taxonomies, less than, like, geography and, you know, politics
more
and stuff like that.
More taxonomy than geography.
If you really like biospheres, you will love Pokemon.
It's true, yeah.
We are
If you love the Krebs cycle, you will love this movie.
We are Generation Biosphere.
We are.
For sure.
Wait, so tell us about how you came to be involved with, again, the film event of the summer, at least if Tessa's children are to be believed, and they are like my number one Hollywood pundits at this point.
I forgot my Detective Pikachu card at home. My husband was like, please get Dan to sign this and have him just pretend that he is Pikachu. I was like, I could just sign it and be like, this is Pikachu. He's like, no, you won't believe that at all. Pikachu. But yeah, how did this happen? How did this come together?
Basically, my partner Benji Samet and I had done a movie for the people that now run Legendary. And when they were in the process of, you know, getting the rights to this movie, and, you know, they really were very eager to get it rolling out, they were like, who are the biggest nerds that we know? Put out the call for them. We need them. And we kind of were in the right place at the right time. And, you know, as it happens, my Pokemon knowledge was, you know, fairly robust.
Did you have to brush up on your Pokemon?
I definitely had to brush up. And I mean, the thing is, like, when we were young, I think we're all around the same age, you know, there were 150, you know, and then every time that there's a new generation of Pokemon, there's another 100 or so that get added. And so by the time that I'm sitting down to write this movie, there are over 800, and now there's close to 1,000.
Yeah.
And so there was a point in the process of writing this movie where I have what's called a Pokedex. It's like the Wiki of Ice and Fire, except mm-hmm. in book form. I have a Pokemon encyclopedia in one hand and the keyboard in the other hand. I'm going, gosh, if only there were some kind of bioluminescent mushroom. I don't know. Flip the page. Oh! Well, that's perfect. If only there were some kind of Pokemon that were like a key. Why would we need a key? That one isn't ultimately in the movie. But, you know, there were just...
Wow.
Anything that you can imagine, there is a type, and like they've thought about it, and it exists, and it has two evolutions. And so it became a process of curation. There are so many of these things. How do you sort of get to which ones are going to be in the movie or which ones can even sustain a movie?
I saw Charizard made the cut.
Charizard had to make the cut because that's one of the original, like, OG.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
People like Charizard.
Wait, did Jigglypuff do it? He looks really mean in the trailer. Like,
Jiggly has definitely got an attitude in the trailer. I don't know if I necessarily envisioned that exact thing when we were writing, but I like it. I actually love it.
Jigglypuff is a good Super Smash Brothers character to play.
Well, interestingly, Smash Brothers was like a real entry point for me because I was a little bit older than I think the height of the Pokemon craze, where if I had been 2 or 3 years younger, I probably would have really been, you know, deep in it from day one. But because of video games and because of, like, funnily enough, internet culture, you kind of had to brush up and get to know these different characters. Like Psyduck is my personal favorite.
Really?
Oh, by far.
Why?
By far. Because Psyduck is, the premise of Psyduck, for those of you who know, is a little duck that has psychic abilities, and if he gets too stressed out, he has a psychic explosion and could kill everyone.
I mean,
so
same.
They constantly have to keep Psyduck calm.
That would be nice to be Psyduck.
Psyduck calming music. They have to, you know, but for a long time, on this forum I used to go on all the time, Something Awful, one of the little emojis that they would use was just Psyduck grabbing his head for, that sort of became synonymous with, like,
this is
what the hell, what the fuck is this? And so I always thought it was just so funny. And so one of the first things that, when we came on board, we said, Psyduck is clearly the comedic breakout of all of these Pokemon. Why? Because he was neurotic to begin with, you know? And so as a comedy writer, I was like, well, we want all the Pokemon that, like, have comedic quirks and stuff. Let's put those guys in the movie right away so that we can actually, you know, kind of build story around them and stuff. So that was my thought process as I approached it.
Do you have any of the, like, super powerful, like, Arceus and Yveltal and all those people, guys?
I'm not at liberty.
I'm not at liberty
to reveal the power level of the Pokemon.
Do you guys know about Arceus?
No.
Emily and Molly?
No.
Arceus is like Pokemon, but it's like God, and it has 1,000 arms, and it created the world, and it can destroy it.
What?
And Yveltal is like, correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, but it's like kind of like the evil Arceus, who comes and he's like the destroyer. He's like a super powerful, like,
evil Pokemon. I had no idea that this level of like intensity existed within the Poke world. Like, granted, I have the most.
There is a cosmology. There is a super cosmology.
Turned into Evangelion while we were paying attention.
Yeah. I mean, I would love that.
And then there's like Lunala and
Tesco's deep.
Yeah.
You should write the next one. You seem to know.
You know what? Not a bad idea.
I was lobbying heartily for this conversation to include Dick Tracy and Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yes.
Because those are two of the movies I remember being very excited about as a kid. And I was trying to remember, like, why were we all very excited about Dick Tracy? What a weird thing to be excited about.
It's not that you read the comics or anything.
I did read the comics. Oh, you did. I was a weird 1950s culture consuming
kid. I read them
too. Yeah.
In fact, Dick Tracy is one of my, like, I wouldn't say hobbies, but like I go deep.
Well, I learned that Batman was based on Dick Tracy, that it was like inspired by Dick Tracy, which made so much sense to me because I'm always saying Batman's a cop. And it was like, oh, he literally is based on Dick Tracy. He like is a cop.
I mean, if you look at the rogues gallery of Dick Tracy, which is as good as it gets,
totally.
You can sort of see where. And each of them have sort of like a very like simple, like shoulders has large shoulders. The brow's got a big brow. Prune face is wrinkly, you know, like, but it's like very, they're very grotesque in a way.
They're super grotesque. You know? And in the movie, it's so grotesque. They just did a Dick Tracy reboot comic that I just bought a copy of at Golden Apple. Because I was like, ooh, Dick Tracy, it's in the air. But also it was the first Disney comic book movie.
I go pretty deep on these things. And I have an archive of toys and stuff. So I actually was going to bring you each a Mint in Box Steve the Tramp figure. But I couldn't find them. But I did bring this little... So do you remember this controversy at the time? I have the rest of these guys in my car.
That is amazing.
But, yeah, Dan just brought out a Dick Tracy figure.
That's awesome, Dan.
So Molly, this will actually appeal to your interest, which is at the time there was a big stink because there's this character that is from the comic, Steve the Tramp. And he's, you know, he's like a homeless bad guy. But they made this figure, Steve the Tramp, you know, homeless rights activists, and people were like, this is such a negative portrayal. This is so unacceptable. So this figure at the time in the consumerist, you know, like early 90s became very valuable. And that's why I bought like five of them in box. So I have for each of you a Mint in Box Steve the Tramp.
Oh, thank you so much. That's amazing.
But it's lost. My mom moved from Florida, and so she basically shipped me like every. I'm like a collector. So I have the stuff literally in a tent outside of my house. And so I will find you these Mint in Box Steve the Tramps.
That is amazing.
They're not worth that much anymore. I should have sold high.
Well, now that Dick Tracy mania is coming back. Yeah. But yeah, also Roger Rabbit seems like a very obvious inspiration for Detective Pikachu.
I mean, that was the one that I think Benji and I were thinking about the most. And I think that, and by the way, there were other writers who worked on the movie, Nicole Perlman, Derek Connolly, Rob Letterman, who also directed the movies. But I do think that all of us, when we decided to really actually try to tell a detective story, we're very aware of Roger Rabbit. And specifically the things that I like about Roger Rabbit are the internal logic of how the toons function, and that at no point do they – once they establish a rule, they are pretty faithful to that thing. You know, whether it's if the weasels laugh too much, they die, or the dip, or whatever it is. Like, there's an internal logic that – is sacrosanct, and the way that the toons think about things, the way that the toon logic functions is really interesting. And so when we're trying to write a scene between, you know, the main character of Pikachu and like a Bulbasaur, you're sitting there going like, what does Bulbasaur want?
Right? What's his motivation?
What is Bulbasaur's motivation? And by the way, the Pokemon Company had a lot of opinions about this. It wasn't just like, do whatever you want. It was like, no. Bulbasaurs behave in a certain way.
How did they behave?
You know, there were certain ones where they would say, well, these guys maybe don't team up.
Right.
You know, like, or these guys are not as strategically minded, or these guys, you know. So
like Tapu Lele would never.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, it really sounds, so it was kind of a weird experiment in sitting down and going, okay, what's the emotional reality of Jigglypuff?
I love that, though.
Well, that's why Who Framed Roger Rabbit is so, like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, you are so invested emotionally in those characters. And that's another thing, too, where you're like, you're using some things. There's original characters, but also when they do go to Toontown, it's like, who do you decide to show that will flesh out that universe?
And I think that movie, by the way, still stands up. Like,
oh, super stands up.
Like, a lot. And the fact that Eddie Valiant, he takes the tunes very seriously, even though he doesn't like them. Mm-hmm. He just, it is a part of life that is just true to this city and this version of San Francisco, I think it is, like that.
I always thought it was Los Angeles.
Or maybe it is Los Angeles. I can't remember. But I remember it's the trolley line that, you know, is the whole crux of the
thing. It's the LA red car thing.
There is a real reality to like, okay, this is a city where if you go to the coffee shop, there could be a tune there. And that's just, no one is really that put out by it at that point. Yeah.
It's also about gentrifying tunes out of Toontown to put the freeway through it. It is very like LA history centric. It's like, there's this great neighborhood that.
But it's right. The historic, you know, tune restaurants.
Yeah.
And, you know,
like we're going to tear it down to put the freeway through it for progress.
Also, like the idea of like a self-loathing tune.
Yeah.
Is as the villain is ingenious and.
And it's terrifying.
Terrifying.
Yeah, it's a very scary
movie. Did you
movie.
Show, Tess, did you show your kids Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
No,
yet?
They would be so scared.
Yeah.
I like was kind of scared
movie.
Of Who Framed.
Oh,
yeah.
I was super scared, but that's what makes it good.
I would be terrified. They just saw Beetlejuice, which
that's way scarier.
No, I was never that afraid of Beetlejuice, and they loved it, but they were also like petrified and scarred by it.
I think it's because Beetlejuice is. He's never really the bad guy
of
that movie. Whereas Judge Doom is dips the little shoe and was the most traumatic thing that's ever happened.
I found Beetlejuice as scary as Judge Doom.
I actually think Beetlejuice is a really utopian portrait of the afterlife, which we'll get to later. But I was like, they look great. They can sleep in the air. They can just levitate.
What about
like,
the bird
faces?
Push their faces
they can,
around.
It doesn't hurt them. They can push their faces around. How great would that be? I think of a million opportunities a day when I could use
it. It's very reassuring that there is a handbook of the dead.
That's what
Beetlejuice.
I'm saying.
It's like, okay.
There's
well,
a bureaucracy
what are we,
of the dead.
There's
we,
a serious exactly. bureaucracy.
Yeah. What we've learned is we all like fantasy bureaucracy.
It's true.
I love a good form. I love a good map. That's where Molly and I differ, I guess. Yeah. But
I always just like want a mundane story. Like I always say this, but like Jurassic Park on a day, nothing goes wrong.
Yeah,
slice of life.
And yet you won't watch Terrace House, which is basically the
oh, you'll love
to be
Terrace
the feel
House.
Good
Are you kidding me?
Lagoon ride.
Yeah.
Hey, folks. If you love true stories about extraordinary life experiences, we think you'll love the Risk podcast. Risk is the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share, stories too uncensored for public radio. On Risk, nothing's too intimate or too strange, like the one about the guy who got kidnapped by the drug cartel, or the girl who discovered she was living with a cannibal, or the woman who learned the person she was sharing kinky fantasies with online was her dear old dad. You'll hear real people sharing about life experiences so funny, so scary, so mystifying, you won't believe your ears. Find it all at riskshow.com or just search on your podcast app for Risk. That's R-I-S-K exclamation point or risk-show.com.
So we have a night email this week coming to us from Eric. Eric writes, Miss Lambert, Miss Lynch, Miss Yoshida, if you guided the dead to the afterlife, what would your aesthetic be? Do you go with a classic like the Grim Reaper or the Death Coach or something fresh? Do you tailor it to each soul? That's from Eric. Again, thank you, Eric. This is a really good question, and we started to get into it. I mean, the Tim Burton Beetlejuice afterlife aesthetic is definitely like a very timeless afterlife aesthetic, at least in the history of cinema. Like that's
I think it's extremely realistic as well.
Yeah, it feels like it would be boring. It would be a slog.
Yeah,
you have to take a number, you know.
I don't know that you have to go somewhere else. You can stay where you are,
sure,
for a long time, haunting or not. I think it sounds right to me, but it's not necessarily what I would want from the afterlife. I mean, if this is like what exactly would be ideal, I might come up with something different.
I think my ideal aesthetic would be, and this is going to sound horrible when I say it out loud, but just like bear with me, it would be something between an airport and a nursing home.
But wait, you don't have to be old.
No,
so
no,
why
no,
have
no,
it
no,
be
no,
a nurse?
It's a, no, it's
just
a,
an extended
I'm just saying
care
like
facility.
a kind of wide space with like tiled floors and Venetian blinds, and it's always magic hour coming through the windows. Mm-hmm. And there are
Las
like
Vegas?
Potted plants
I think you're
and
just,
stuff.
I think you're describing no, Las Vegas.
It's the Venetian.
It's like, no, it's like more like, I don't know, if you ever follow or like listen to these like vaporwave mixes on YouTube, like, and they always choose this sort of like 90s anime looped animation of like the inside of a mall with like a shimmering fountain and like this chill ass jazz playing. Like,
that's, oh, I know exactly what
like,
you mean.
That's
yeah.
basically what I'm going for. But I think it would be like a long corridor with like an endless moving walkway and like the sun is always streaming through one side. Like that would be my design.
Is it empty? Or
yeah,
is it just
it's
you?
It's mostly empty. I mean, it's like quiet. It's like peaceful. There's like a fountain.
What about you, Dan? What do you think?
It's a great question, and I've arrived at it's Denny's.
Okay.
Just
that
Denny's.
Totally works
what
for
did
me
you
too.
Get? What are you ordering?
It's you're it's a moons over my hammy forever. and I guess if I were the Grim Reaper S character, I would sort of be the sort of like gregarious avuncular waiter.
Nice.
As people kind of figured out where they were.
Yeah. I think you just sold a sitcom.
I know. Yeah.
CBS here. Heaven. Heaven.
Death
Diner.
Friended me.
Yeah.
I think that's right because I find diners to be sort of a weird liminal space
yeah, we
to
love
begin
diners.
With,
yes.
And of course I know that's you guys very much yeah. you guys aesthetic. So I think Denny's. Yeah,
I agree because heaven is 24 hours.
Molly, what would yours be?
Some sort of green space.
That's unexpectedly vague.
Yeah. I don't know. I just came back from Oregon. It's like all I can think about is like that there are places that have water.
You
naturally.
Know, it's such a good aesthetic for the afterlife. In fact, I like started to design a D&D campaign around this once. Is
yes, go on.
It's in Portland, in downtown Portland, there are all these parks that are kind of these constructed cement waterfalls that you can kind of. They don't, I think sometimes some of them have water going through them and some of them don't. So they're just these like series of steps. But because it's Oregon and like tends to be kind of damp and mossy, like a lot of times it's just these like sort of, it feels like the ruins of an American city. Like it's just moss covered, like
yeah,
cement
everything,
structures. Oh, I love it. It makes me feel
no,
so good.
No, everything. And okay, here is another medieval fantasy thing I like. I love Legend of Zelda.
Oh, Zelda's
yeah.
great.
And that,
interesting.
Like,
that, especially the most recent Zelda was really good.
Oh, I just love
it was
all
mostly
the Zeldas.
Just like
something
making
like
food.
That, like a foresty.
Can I tell you mine now
evergreen.
That we've been talking about it?
Yeah, of course.
Okay,
damn.
Have you guys ever been to one of the restaurants that's like underground with the aquarium walls?
No, where's
oh,
that?
Yeah. I feel like I went to one maybe at like Epcot.
That feels
but
very.
I might be
I've yeah. been in a restaurant like that. For
that
sure.
is
that
definitely
like
the
Florida.
Afterlife.
Think,
it was totally Florida.
You think the afterlife?
Florida is the afterlife, as we all know.
It's a glass bottom submarine.
It, well, I think it's oh, a. Yeah. I think it's one of. It has a weird menu. Like I'm going off the Denny's because I'm like, what if there were no food? There has to be food. But I'm like, it's all like baked Alaska and crab yeah. claws and stuff, and then you're just watching like all these fish go by.
That sounds great.
Well, yeah, that sounds pretty good. Good, actually.
The revolving yeah. Any revolving restaurant on any tower where the food is like oh, bad, yeah. but you go
like
just
the Rainbow Room in New York. Not that the food is bad.
Yeah, I've never been to,
I've never
yeah.
been to the Rainbow
restaurant.
Room, but I've been to whatever it's called, like LA Prime on top of the
yep.
the
Bonaventure.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a good, I mean, it's incredible. Like, you don't care that you're paying $20 for a shitty steak sandwich. It's just like the best vibe in the world. It basically feels unchanged from, you know, the mid 90s. I love it.
My wife went to Duke's in Malibu and a pod of dolphins swam by on the
yes.
sort of the like giant window. So that sounds pretty good to me. I like yours the best, I think.
So the afterlife is Malibu.
Yeah. Malibu.
Fine with that. We'll finally get to live there in the afterlife.
Exactly.
I like that.
Before we go out, do we want to chat about our cryptid fascination?
Yeah.
Oh,
week?
Yeah.
We brought Dan on because I was tweeting about the song Woolly Bully by Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. Mm-hmm. And Dan, it turns out, is also the world's foremost expert on Woolly Bully. Dan, take it away.
Well, I don't know if I'm the world's foremost expert, but I will say this. A little background. My father was going to lead a cryptozoological expedition into the Everglades to find the skunk ape.
Oh.
A very, very important cryptid.
What? When was this? When did your dad?
This was in just before I was born. A hurricane. They had rented the airboats. You know, they were ready to go. I have the correspondence between the American Cryptozoological Society and my father. Hurricane, I believe it was Hurricane Hugo, blew off the expedition and it was never mounted. So that's a little background on me. And so when I hear Woolly Bully, I recognize that as a cryptid right away. Got two horns and a woolly jaw. What are we talking about here? We're talking about the first Squatch song that's ever been recorded. That's what we're talking about. They were squatching.
I thought it was the devil.
No. I mean, maybe. We don't know that.
The devil could be a cryptid, too.
I don't know if the devil falls. Look.
If you saw a Baphomet, it would be kind of similar to maybe like a skunk ape.
But I don't think that you would casually have Maddie tell Hattie about a thing she saw.
Yeah.
Which is...
Wait, so let's list all the things that we know about it, though, just like to be sure.
Two horns.
Two big horns.
A woolly jaw.
That's
it.
That's all we know.
And that it's a woolly bully.
It has wool. Or it's wool-ish. Like there's some wool-like substance that it has as its coat.
Yes, and that its behavior was demonstrably bully-ish. You know, that there was some threat to the creature itself. Now, I have gone even deeper on this because in the next verse, Hattie tells Maddie, essentially says, forget it. Don't be L7. Let's dance. That sounds like a classic Dana Scully, oh, you didn't see what you thought you saw, Mulder. I think that there's a lot going on underneath the Woolly Bully.
I learned a lot.
They want you to do just dance.
Yes, exactly.
They don't want you to know about the Woolly Bully.
Sam the Sham had a cat named Woolly Bully.
Oh, yeah?
It's also served as the inspiration for the song, according to Wikipedia.
I mean, yes.
Just throwing it out there.
Oh,
just
sure.
There are cat truthers who think it's about a cat?
No, it's according to Sam the Sham.
Because I also heard people say it was about a woolly mammoth, that somebody like sees a woolly mammoth.
I think a woolly mammoth is actually, in some ways, a more compelling theory than even the Squatch because... of the horns.
Right.
Well, I heard also...
But it doesn't have a woolly...
What I heard from Maddie...
Jaw, it's woolly all over.
Is that also there is maybe... It was like when the woolly mammoth was discovered or something. There was like maybe a big find in the press. And so it was like a novelty song about a woolly mammoth being found.
Really?
That is what I heard in my research.
I haven't heard that one, but that's awesome if true because...
That it was to cash in on the like woolly mammoth
on the woolly craze.
Is this all the same kind of general... Is this a contemporary with the flying purple people eater? Like was there a cryptid
trend? Actually, yes, actually it actually is contemporary with
totally,
this.
Totally, that's also a cryptid.
But I had a thought. I had a thought, which I'll pose to you guys, which is there aren't that many songs about cryptids or that even reference cryptids.
The Squonk, though.
In Steely Dan?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Oh. So the Squonk being the most famous cryptid, I think, in popular music.
Have you
music.
Ever seen a Squonk's Tears?
Well, look at mine.
Well, look at mine. That's right.
We need to make a song about a cryptid, I think is what you're saying.
We should
also,
commission a song about a cryptid.
Have you guys read The Fearsome Creatures of the Great, what is it, of the Great Lumberwoods or the North Lumber? There's a book that the Squonk comes from, and they have, like, the Hodag. They have all of the different cryptids from, like, this particular region. That's where Steely Dan got the Squonk. But I have you can get a copy, but it's, like, you can only get, like, the most bootleg copy of this book.
We like cryptids because they're so regional, too.
They are regional.
Can I pose another thing, which is... You know that song, the one about Little Talks? It's like, don't listen when you blow, whatever. It's like, I was really counting you guys knowing this song.
No,
I don't.
It's like,
Monsters.
Oh, yeah.
Monsters and Men. Monsters and Men.
Thank you, producer Rachel.
Yes.
Nice.
Monsters and Men. So that song I thought was very metaphorical. It seemed like she was talking to like a metaphorical ghost of a past relationship. No, it is literally about a ghost. I found that to be less interesting suddenly. Whereas the Woolly Bully, I think, is literally about a woolly bully. And I find it more interesting.
I agree. It's way more interesting if it's a real woolly bully.
Also, like a garage rock song that you don't really know what it's about is like the perfect garage rock song.
Yeah.
I read that book once about Louie Louie and how there was like an obscenity trial because nobody knew what the lyrics were for sure.
But it's also because apparently on the recording of Louie Louie, you can hear the drummer yell fuck when he drops his drumsticks. And guess what? We just earned ourselves an explicit rating.
Yeah.
You've been cursing so much. Congratulations,
too
everyone.
Too hot for TV over here.
Too hot to pop.
Well, going deep on a song that's 60 years old or something.
Apparently, it's the drumstick drops at the 54-second mark Louie on Louie Louie.
Well, we are blowing the lid off
the
Woolly Bully. I also didn't know. It made sense when I thought about it, but I was like, oh, they're like a Tejano, like bar blues band.
This is Cold Case, Woolly Bully.
It is.
Well, thank you so much for being on this week, Dan. I appreciate your insight on everything from cryptid pop songs and Game of Thrones.
Thank you for having me. I am a huge fan, and this has been a real career highlight. So thank you very much, ladies.
Well, we will see you to mount a D&D campaign.
Yeah.
Day now.
Emily Ray apparently has one written.
I can alter it slightly to be a Detective Pikachu tie-in, and then we'll host.
I'm in. I'm ready.
Awesome. Well, everybody go see, not that you need our reminder, but go see Detective Pikachu when it is out. When?
May 10th.
May 10th. Oh, my God.
May 3rd in Japan.
May 3rd in Japan.
You're in Japan, it's May 3rd.
I'm going to the premiere Thursday.
Cool.
Oh, nice.
So we'll see.
Say hi to Jigglypuff for us.
Yes.
I'm hoping there will be some Pokey representation on the red carpet,
better be. If you have any thoughts on cryptids or anything else night-related, please give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT. You can also email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. Please follow us on social media, nightcallpod on Twitter, nightcallpodcast on Facebook and Instagram. And if you're liking the show, please like, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you next week. One of us has to say bye.
Bye.
There we go.
Bye.